Hello, everyone. So who was here last night and heard my blurb? Just a couple people, so it's going to be kind of similar. But for everyone else, my name is Jill Marie. Marie's the last name, so I just go by Jill, and I'm the center manager here. And I pop into every single class that is new, like the first class of every module of DB, the first class of every Discovery Nutshell tonight, the first class of every Meditation 101. Just pop in and say hi. And then scoot home. So, hello. So Karen is your teacher tonight, and you are very, very lucky. She's one of my very, very. She's one of my first loves here. So we met each other at some teachings in Pennsylvania, and then I came to the Kadampa Center. I lived here for 10 years, so I had to go up to Pennsylvania to meet her. So her and her husband are very close to my heart. So you're very fortunate. So maybe you'll make pals tonight. Who knows where that will go, right? All right. You never know. So, yeah, and now I'm center manager. So look, what one of you could be the manager in 10 years. We're grooming you now. So let's see. What usually just say hello and make it kind of like a welcoming thing. I get the auspiciousness of talking about money, since everything we do here is donation only, and many of you have heard that many times. But I like to reinforce the fact that it's kind of odd. How many places have you been that's a beautiful building like this where you can attend free? You know, it's kind of strange. And last night I told you guys, but there's a friend of mine who traveled. I don't know which center he was at, but he came back and he's like, oh my God, they charged like $12 for a DB class. And that's really, really common all across the entire world. We're one of the few centers, if not, I don't know if we're the only. Yeah, almost one of the only out of 166 centers worldwide in the FPMT. You'll hear all about that. Right? You talk. Okay. That doesn't charge. So it's donation only. It doesn't mean it's free, but if you need that to be free, it can be free. But if you want to support us so that everything that we do, it's like you're here tonight because of other students supporting the center in years past. So we've been thinking about the stream that's created. And whatever we do tonight supports the students of the future. So it's kind of cool. That's the Buddhist thing you're going to hear about. And we have many ways you can give. So you can give by dropping checks or cash into two donation boxes. And in the back by the lights, will you point to that sign? Text giving. Yeah, there it is. See? My Vanna White, and I age myself by saying that. So text giving is a really simple way. If you just plug in a couple numbers and you enter your data the next time, you don't even have to do anything but say, give. $500. It'll go like that. you can go online and sign up to our online community through our website. So there's a lot of different ways. I think that's everything. One thing I've been kicking around, sometimes I have like a Sesame Street dialogue in my head, you know, like the number of the week or the number of the day. So I have this like word, and it's engagement. So I was laughing last night that I just got engaged and I wasn't even thinking of that. So it's engagement at the center. How do we engage? And today we came up with another tagline, another word to go with it to make it a tagline, that's engagement through encouragement. So I think that's kind of cool. So we encourage you to engage and commit right now. This is going to sound scary, like I'm getting ready to say something scary, but it's not actually scary because it's like a sign up to this. Now, I just want you to think about committing to coming for 5 weeks. You may be thinking, yeah, I'm going to go to this class. But we know it mouse tails off. That's our word of dwindling down. And then new people are going to come. But just make a commitment to do 5 weeks, because you'll finish something. It'll be complete. You'll get the whole path. It's so valuable to get the bookends of what it means to discover. I'm using discovering Buddhism, but discover what the entire path is. So you have that in your mind stream and you know. So I just encourage you to engage and be a part of the whole thing. And then if you want to start coming to the center, we'll talk to you about other ways to engage. But for now, just jump in and commit to coming for 5 weeks. So that's all I wanted to say. Have a wonderful class.
But usually, there it goes. You have to wait a few seconds. I didn't wait long enough. So good evening and welcome. And I know that some of you are here for a class, so welcome. And some of you have been in our doors before and were comfortable walking in here. How many have never been in a Buddhist center before? So several, okay. It's interesting, when people first walk in here, for some it's kind of overwhelming. And for others, it's like this, where you just feel like you came home, and there's no right or wrong. It just depends on our karma, right? What led us to come in here. So it's fascinating. When we first came to the center was located in the basement of this office complex. We started walking down, it was dark, pitch dark, and we start walking down this back little alley. And I said, no way, no how, I'm out of here. And I turned around to leave, and one of our members who used to run the bookstore said, no, wait, I'll show you in, come on. So sometimes it just takes somebody guiding us in that door, and I just think, just like Jill was so appreciative that she found the center through us. It's just amazing how you find this center and what happens to your life from there. So there's lots of reasons why y'all are probably here. And I think Jill said my name, Karen Mastriani, and I'm one of many volunteers at the center. But it'd be good just to quickly go around the room and just introduce yourself, say why you're here. It could be for a number of reasons. Curiosity, your teacher made you, your parents made you, your kid made you, or just, you know, searching for a spiritual path. And some of you may just have that real interest in Buddhism. So just, there's a lot of people in here, so we don't have a lot of time to share, but if we could quickly go around and introduce ourselves and actually, yep, thank you. if we could just start, you could just start right there, and then we'll pass the microphone around, and I'll talk about the microphone, but you have to talk into the microphone when you're in this class, and we'll talk about that in a second.
My name is Matt. I'm here because I'm interested in Buddhism and living right, so hopefully find some things that can help me here.
Oh, yeah. You're in the right place.
I don't do this normally.
I know.
Okay. My name is Van Kia, and I've been coming here for the Sunday teachings for about a month, and it feels like home.
Oh.
So I just want to learn more and go deeper, and I'm thankful. So.
Yeah, great. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Fanny, and I've been coming to the center for about a year. So I completed this course, and I'm just redoing it to, I don't know, refresh some knowledge, and yeah, I guess that.
You know, when you hear something, you only remember about 10% of what you hear the first time. So every time I take something here, I mean, taking it again is invaluable. So, okay.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I've been coming here for about a year as well, and this is my first time for Buddhism in a nutshell, and I'm just really interested in everything about Buddhism.
Great.
My name's Naomi. I was just interested to learn more about Buddhism. I recently certified in yoga, and the style of yoga is centered in Buddhism, so.
Yeah.
I'm Chow. I was born in a traditional Buddhism family in China, and learning Buddhism since young, and read some Chinese books. So, but I like to see how Americans' perspective, and also see systematically how to understand the whole system.
Yeah, yeah, great. Then we can learn a lot from you too.
My name's Dan, and I've been coming here for a few weeks, mostly for meditation, and I want to learn more.
My name is Steve, and I've been reading about Buddhism for about 30 years. I decided it was time to try it on.
Yeah, good.
For size, and because I have a very undisciplined mind.
And reading, it's hard to discipline your mind. You gain the knowledge, but not the practice. And so this is a nice combination of studying and then getting a practical, hands-on practice perspective. Okay.
So I'm also Ashley, a very popular name. I came here just once before and kind of wanted to take a deeper dive into Buddhism and what it all meant.
My name's Melissa. I was I'm very interested and curious in looking for spiritual paths. I've also got two sons, and they've participated in the kids program, which has been awesome.
Oh.
So, yeah, and I feel at home here, too. It's really nice.
Can everybody hear okay? Okay, good. We do have a great children's program here for anybody who has kids. It's really fabulous.
My name's Tristan, and I'm here to learn more about Buddhism, so I figured tonight is a great night to be here. It's the first class of this session, or this course, so it's a good time to jump in.
Hi, I'm Larissa. I know a little bit about Buddhism. I kind of studied it, and I lived in South Korea, so I actually spend some time at a temple, monastery, kind of. We spend, I think, like 3 days at one, so. And I came to support my friend, not to be alone.
Great.
Welcome.
And, you know, some people call Buddhist centers temples. Some people, you know, there's Buddhist monasteries, and we call this a center. But you can call it a center or a temple. People do use different names to call our center.
Me neither.
Yes, Brian is one of our IT gurus. I'll introduce him. How long have you been coming here?
5 years.
5 years. Wow. Holy cow. Man, time flies. All right.
Hi. I'm Samantha. I've been reading about this and felt this as sort of my path for a while, but just need to learn more about the practice and dragged my bestie here for moral support. So.
Hello, my name is Clarice. I've been coming to the Buddhist Center for the past 4 months. I have two young children who are also in the children program, and I feel like I don't really get time to read books, which is my preference, so I figured that I would just come and take the class and see how that goes.
You still have to read a book. No, not in this class, you don't.
Hi, my name is Jen. This is my first time coming, and it's sort of a mix of curiosity and an interest in sort of finding a spiritual path.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Kirby. I came on Sunday just because I thought it would be hysterical if I came.
And was it?
It was. At the beginning, you know, I was like, what did I get myself into? But by the end of it, I was so moved by it, and I was just like, I got to keep coming back to this. This is awesome. So I'm just here to, you know, connect with others, and more importantly, connect with myself.
Remember that. That's what Buddhism is about, connecting with yourself.
I'm Steve. I'm from Wake Forest, and I'm here to help learn some answers to life's questions.
I'm Brandon. I'm doing a school project on this. I'm from Athens Drive High School, and I just thought it'd be kind of interesting too to learn about Buddhism. That's
right.
Something I know a lot about, so I'm here to learn.
Okay. So, all of you here from Athens, are you coming back next week? That's my question. Who's your teacher? I want their name. This was a 5-week commitment. No, I'm kidding.
My name is Josh, and long story short, I went to Thailand for a few months to check off a few bucket list items, and during that time, I spent living with Buddhists and near a monastery, and I just became enamored with it, and so I just moved to Raleigh a few weeks ago, I'm excited to learn more.
That's great.
Yeah.
Did you know there was a Buddhist center in Raleigh when you moved here?
No.
Isn't that just amazing? I mean, amazing. Anyhow, I'll talk about that some more. It blows me away every time I think about it.
Yeah. My name is Carolina, and I'm here to learn more about Buddhism.
Great.
Hi, my name is Steve. My wife and I just finished Meditation 101 back a couple of weeks ago. Both of us had been interested in Buddhism for quite some time, and I think, you know, the current there's a lot of negativity in the world today, and that kind of drove us kind of over the edge that we have to do something to be able to deal with this personally. So I think that's what got us to coming here. So, thanks.
Many people say it helps. I'm still waiting for it to wash over me and help.
I'm Danny, and I came to this class about a month ago, just for one class, but I really liked it. I really liked the atmosphere, so I decided I would come back.
Great. Was it the Meditation 101 class? Was there a nun teaching it?
No, it was a guy. It was the same class, but it wasn't the first session. I just dropped in.
Ah, great. All right.
I'm Avi, and I've been looking for, like, a spiritual path to follow, so I've heard about Buddhism. I've read about it, so I wanted to try it out.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I have been reading and hearing about Buddhism on a shallow level for a very long time, and what I've heard about it is really appealing to me as far as, you know, like compassion and also being able to center your mind and kind of get rid of some of the anxiety thoughts that have plagued me my whole life. I know there are a lot of different kinds of Buddhism, but this is the one that has a temple near me, so.
Yeah, good.
Here I am.
You came to the right one.
I'm Audrey. My son is in Athens Drive, so I'm here to support him. But I am interested in, curious about Buddhism and then interested in meditation, too.
Great.
I'm Drew. I'm here for a school project with Athens Drive High School. And I decided to choose Buddhism because it's an alternative to other religions out there.
Great. It can be a nice complement to other religions as well. And we'll talk about that too.
Hi, I'm Kurt. Our family visited Tibet a couple of years ago, and I want to continue my interest.
Wow. Thanks. That's happening rarer and rarer, so how wonderful.
Hi, I'm Clint. I'm here to learn more about Buddhism and how to be content.
Great.
I'm April. I've been interested in mindfulness for a while, and so randomly just Googled Buddhist classes, and here we are.
I'm Matt, and I just have a growing interest in Buddhism and wanted to learn more and more about myself. So
yeah,
that's why I'm here.
Hi, my name is Paula, and my first visit to the center was on Sunday, and I felt like I was home when I came Sunday. It felt really good when I left here. So with that, I wanted to come back and learn more about Buddhism and want to learn about how to live a happy and peaceful life, and also interested in the meditation class as well.
Yeah, great. Is that everybody? No.
Hi, I'm Sophia, and I'm at Athens Drive, and I'm also here for a school project with Miss Kirby.
Hi, I'm John. Driving, chauffeuring around, playing Vanna, and I've been here for 25 minutes.
and counting, no.
I'm Katie. I drove out here from Wendell. I've been interested in Buddhism for a long time, but there's nothing near us. And specifically meditation and just helping me and my kids have a quieter mind, quieter life.
Great.
I'm Abby. I'm from Athens also. And I chose Buddhism because I think it seems just really interesting and different.
Hi, I'm Leslie, and I'm Abby's mom, and so I'm here with her for support tonight, and I'm also interested in just learning more about Buddhism.
Great.
Hi, I'm Kristen. I'm here with Athens Drive 2 for the Religion Project, and I'm just really interested in Buddhism and, like, what it's all about.
I'm Sophia. I'm also from Athens Drive on the Religion Project, and I chose Buddhism because I felt it would be an interesting thing to learn about since I don't know much about it.
Great. So everybody's here for different reasons, yet we're all on this similar path, and we've all collided here for whatever reason, which is awesome. And I may not have all the answers for you, but I will get them because I know the teachers here who are outstanding, our lay teacher and our Sangha, our monks and nuns as well. And so I will get back with you for whatever information that you might need. And also, if you hear some, I hope I don't say anything incorrectly, but realize it's the fault of the teacher and not the teachings, that there is no contradictions in the teachings. The teachings are not wrong. So if you hear something that you learned differently, or you just say, wait a minute, you just said the opposite of something you said before, please don't hesitate to say that. My interest in being here is just to help us all gain a better understanding, including me, because it does make you do that. I only teach this class once a year, and I love it. There are several of us who volunteer and teach the class, so we all take turns, and it's a big commitment, just like it's a big commitment for you all to come here tonight. It really is. You have busy lives. You go to school. You work outside of the home or in the home, and yet you took the effort and made the effort to come. And I do several volunteer projects here. Jill talked about how this center is run by volunteers. She's our only paid staff. Our Sangha get a stipend. Our teachers get a stipend for teaching here. The rest of us really volunteer. So there's all kinds of capacities to get involved. We also have a prison project, which I've been volunteering with the prison project for about a year, where we go in and we teach meditation to, I have never used the word inmates, and they're making me call them inmates, and it almost just came out of my mouth naturally. But it's a medium security women's facility in Troy, and I call them ladies and participants, and I'm not allowed to do that anymore. So anyhow, that's one of my ongoing struggles. But that's pretty awesome, and it's pretty awesome to watch the progress there. I do volunteer drivers, so I coordinate the driver calendar. I'm on, it's the HR committee, but we don't really do that much, but we do have an HR committee. So we have several projects that I've been involved in, including some of the cushions that you all are sitting on. I ran the sewing project here. I cannot sew a straight line to save my life, but anyhow, I could cut patterns and get groups of people together, and they did an awesome job sewing some of these things, so that was a fun project. So there's all kinds of different things you can get involved with here at the center. And then I also have a real job outside of here, where my husband and I, we have our own business. We've been in business since 1993, helping companies create a better place to work. So we help to work on well-being, resiliency, safety, leadership development, because all that impacts our own well-being. And so it's kind of neat that we've been able to bring several of these principles into the workplace. Some of you were talking about the children's program, and our children's program teaches what are called the 16 guidelines. We have one of the books out there. But these 16 guidelines are how we all need to live our lives to be happier and more compassionate and that peaceful, calm mind. And they're actually leadership characteristics. So it's a perfect meld with what we need to be as effective leaders, leaders with character, and just coworkers and supporters who also need to practice things like humility and patience and respect and kindness and empathy and all those skills that we learned in Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or the churches that we belong to, but nobody ever really taught us how to practice that. And through meditation and learning more about Buddhism, we all can. And so sometimes you feel like you've been dropped in the middle. I think this class really gives you a good foundation because it kind of starts at the beginning and works through, but you're still going to feel like, oh my gosh, I can see the trees but not the forest, or I can see the forest and not all the trees that are out there, and I feel like I've been dropped in the middle of something, and it's okay. I wanted a beginning and an end when I was learning about Buddhism, and then, you learn there is no beginning and there is no end, and so you get comfortable being in that middle way. But I don't want anybody to get confused or lost, so hopefully we'll all stay grounded, we'll work on this together, because it is a process. for whatever reasons that that brought us here. So, just to get some housekeeping things out of the way, and my laptop, I can't see my screen. Oh, let me just see. Okay. I broke it, and it's $400 to fix it, so it's going to be broken for a while. So some of you went to our website. I know you went there to find us, and some printed off all kinds of nice handouts that weren't for this class, but they're still awesome. They were for the Discovering Buddhism class, which I'll mention again here later. It's a two-year program that you, there are four to six-week modules, usually five-week modules, that go into much more depth than this grazing we're going to do here, because you're just going to get a smattering of these topics. But when you go there, you'll see under our spiritual program, Buddhism in a Nutshell. And there's like five or six handouts I brought to here tonight, so feel free to take one with you, and then I'll bring others. But you don't have to wait till next week. You can print them off as you if you want to. Nothing or chattering, but they're helpful. They talk about posture in our tradition of meditation, a couple of meditations, some welcome information, etc. So you've already met Mr. Microphone. And I know people don't like talking in a microphone. I get that. But we're recording. Are we live? And we have people watching. You can stream this from home as well. So we have people who are ill or not able to drive in, and they watch it from home. And if you don't talk into the microphone, it's just silence, and they have no idea what's being said. So that's why we ask everybody to speak into the microphone. And then we all get to hear your lovely voices, but especially for the recording and those listening, very important. I'm sure everybody brought their cell phone in, which is fine. Just put it on mute if you can, or as some people call it here, put it on silence or meditation. I didn't bring mine in with me because the last time I brought mine in and mine was the only one that rang that night. So lesson learned. Restrooms, hopefully you found them. Feel free to get up if you just want to stretch or use the restroom. We do have water, tea, etc., but the restrooms are right outside of the Gampa and to the left if you hadn't found them yet. And then my email address, which is mylastname.firstname@gmail.com. I do not, it's my personal email. You can email me anytime with any questions, and I respond relatively quickly. And I may respond, I don't know, I'll get back to you. It's amazing some of the questions people ask, but boy, I learned a lot. Like, why are Buddha's ears so long? Any thoughts of why Buddha's ears are so long? Well, somebody in the class said it's because he wore plugs. And I said, no. It's because he's listening and he's empathetic. So I went to Geshe-la and I said, why are Buddha's ears so long? Geshe-la said, oh, at the time they wore all this big jewelry and it stretched out their ears, so Buddha wore plugs. Who knew? All right. So you can ask me anything. I will find the answer for you. So this really is a graze over. We're not going to go in depth in any topic. The topics like karma, you can study that for 5 weeks, and you don't even skim the surface in 5 weeks. So we're going to talk about karma in a half hour. So that just helps, but you'll get a really good understanding of it, and then it'll be enough that you'll know where you want to head or how you want to study this. But you can study karma for years and just keep grazing the surface. But we will hit all the major topics over 5 weeks. And I really like what Jill said about making that 5-week commitment. If you can, it's tough. Believe me, I know. But every time you come, it builds on the other and you get a little bit more information, a little bit more of a glimpse. So I encourage you to do that. And we'll end on in April, on April 4th, and there's other classes. Some mentioned Meditation 101. That kind of piggybacks with this one. So at the end of this 5 weeks, the Meditation 101 class will begin. And then the Discovering Buddhism is the is a 2-year commitment, and it's really good to take it for the full time. I mean, some people come in, take a few modules, leave, and so you can do it as you know as best for you. But yes, sir. Oh yeah, thank you. Microphone.
So the Discovering Buddhism class, I think it started back in September.
Yes.
If I and can you jump in the middle of it and be okay?
Yes, you can. Now, you can jump in anytime. I would encourage you to jump in at the beginning of one of the modules. If you jump in the middle of a module, you really feel kind of lost.
Yeah, and I was talking about more about whenever one starts up. Is it, will you have enough knowledge? If you didn't attend the classes all the way from September, will you be okay?
Yes, you'll be okay. You definitely will be okay. When we started with the last module, and I thought, holy cow, we kind of messed this up. It was on death and dying and suffering, and so it was like, oh, geez. And I really felt like I was planted in the middle of something and totally lost. So then we waited to start at the beginning, and then I was still planted in the middle of something and totally lost. So it doesn't really matter. And in my, so then you kind of get up with the cohort, right? So in our cohort, there was, I don't know how many of us finished it, whatever, say 10 of us finished it, but there were several people who took several of the modules with us at the beginning and then never came back because those were the only modules they needed. So people, you can start whenever is comfortable for you. Yes. And then it just fills back in. So I think the first one is mind. What is the mind? Oh, she brought the handouts for Discovering Buddhism. We'll have her look it up. And so people are talking about mind, and you're not real sure what that means, but then you get it when you take it the first time. So it's okay. Even though they build on each other, you're not lost.
Mind and its potential.
Mind and its potential. There you go. I remember that from the early 2000s. Which is when I took it. I took the second one they ever offered here, which was kind of amazing. So yes, if you want to go more in depth, or it still doesn't even have to be your path, but if you think it might be your path or you want to go in more in depth, that's the way to do it. Much more detail. This class especially, and even Discovering Buddhism, we don't assume that anybody wants to be a Buddhist. We don't try to convert anybody. It actually goes against the whole principles of Buddhism. So there is no worry or concern about that. It's just information. And all of this information can make us all better people. So we have folks that come to the center regularly who... you know, they go to the Jewish temple or the Christian temples or the Muslim temples, but they like the Buddhist philosophy and it helps enrich their spiritual practice. And then probably a larger percentage of us left whatever, or none, whatever it was that we were practicing and jumped both feet in and stayed here planted. So there's all kinds of ways that you can use Buddhism. So we don't assume anybody wants to be a Buddhist. We don't assume whatever. So everybody's welcome. And no matter what the reason is, I hope that everybody at least learns something that helps just enrich your life, calm our minds, which is what we were all searching for, to make us happier, more peaceful human beings. And that's really, if you get nothing else out of here, that's what you're going to get, which to me I think is pretty awesome myself. And I can speak from experience. So the intentions for this evening are to give you an introduction to our center, our founders, and how we got to be here, to introduce you to Buddhism in a nutshell. And there is a book out there, I see some of you have bought it, that's a namesake, and it does really go into the topics. The book is really, yep, that, there you go, hold it up. And the book has a DVD in the back, so you can plug it in your car. And it's written by actually Venerable Amy Miller, who was just here visiting our center not very long ago, and Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is one of our founders, and I'll talk about him here in a second. Tonight we're just really going to talk about how did this historical Buddha, Shakyamuni, come to be in our lives. And we'll talk a little bit about his history in his first teaching on the Four Noble Truths, the truths of suffering. Buddhists like suffering. That's not true at all. And then a brief introduction to meditation, which we'll do right now, just to set our intentions. And setting intentions and dedicating any positive merit we gained are huge concepts in Buddhism. They can actually frame your entire day. And so Venerable Amy teaches about this a lot. When her eyes open in bed, before she even blinks, she sets her intentions with just that whole positive attitude, and it frames your entire day. Now, I usually don't remember that until I'm in the shower. But no matter when you remember it, you set your intentions, and I'm telling you, it makes a huge difference. But you set your intentions when you go to school to learn something, when you come here to learn, when you walk in those doors, when you sit down to meditate, and then you dedicate whatever you might have gained from it. And it's like bookends, and it solidifies why you're here and what you're doing, kind of frames your whole attitude, and then kind of like putting a drop of water into a pond. It expands instead of just evaporating, and that's what the dedication does for us. And I'll say that over and over again because those are two really important concepts. So let's go ahead and set our intentions and just sit in a comfortable position for right now. And what I ask you to do is close your eyes if you're comfortable with that. And if you're not, at least turn your gaze downwards so that you're not distracted by the trains and the lights and the colors. And to have your feet planted firmly on the floor is a good idea, and then we'll talk about the rest of the posture in a minute. But just take a couple of nice deep breaths for me. And just let go of any reason why you're here, any stressors from your days at school, at work, at home. And I want you just to appreciate the fact that you're here. You could be anywhere else, at home, relaxing, doing 100 other things that I know you have to do, but you came here out of your incredibly busy day in life, and it's huge. And so set your intention. So not just the reason why you're here. That's part of it, and maybe that's your only intention. Your son or daughter made you, your parents made, whatever it might be. But try to set the intention that you're going to learn more about yourself. You're going to explore your mind. Maybe set your intentions to become a more peaceful, calmer, kinder person. So your own well-being, right? But you can't be well if those around you aren't. And so just begin to expand that sense that others may have a peaceful, calm life. Can you imagine, with all the political rhetoric right now, if we all set that intention, what a difference it would make? And then just try to just shut off thoughts. We're just going to do this for a couple of seconds. And the only way you can stop your thoughts is by focusing on something. And so meditation, yes, it's relaxing. It can help us deal with stress, develop that peaceful mind. But it takes concentration. an effort. Because the only way you can create such a mind is to begin to calm down your thoughts and try not to follow all the stories in our head. And so focus on your breath, either at the tip of your nose as you inhale and exhale. Maybe you feel warm air going in, maybe it tickles, cool air going out, or vice versa. Cool air coming in, and then it warms as you exhale. Or you can just follow the rise and fall of your belly. Don't follow your breath, just keep it at the tip of your nose or at the rise and fall of your belly. And count. Each inhale and exhale is one. And the goal is to stay focused on whatever your object is and to notice when your mind starts to wander, because it will. A thought will come up. Can you let it float by? Do you follow the story and then catch yourself? The goal is to catch ourselves as quickly as we realize we've lost our train of thought and bring it back to the object or the breath. And that's our practice. That's how we train our mind. And just remember your intention for why you're here. It's kind of nice to even just sit here for a minute or two and shut off the thoughts. I don't know about you, but when I first started meditating, I realized all the crazy stories that I had in my mind that we follow and we believe, right? So, any comments before I go on about the experience, concern? So our lovely center, we've been in this building since 2007, and even this building, this wall was not here. You know, we added walls, we painted, we put the flooring in, an amazing amount of work, hardly any done by any professional construction people, so don't look too close, but looks pretty darn good. So the center was actually founded in 1991 by Don Brown. He's a physician in practice in Cary. He's a general practitioner. And he started practicing when he was in medical school in Birmingham, Alabama, and actually started a study group there and then brought the study material here to start practicing. They practiced in people's homes. And then in 1992, he invited Dr. Robbie Watkins, who was in medical school with Don, to come be the director of our center in and Robbie was in Florida and left Florida to come up here, and the two of them are in practice together in Cary. And Robbie, all these years, and Robbie has remained the director of our center. And Jill was just hired a year ago to help with some of the day-to-day operations and reports directly to Robbie. We are part of FPMT, the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. And you'll hear more about the Mahayana tradition, but this is the following of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. There are other centers called the New Kadampa Center that do not follow His Holiness, but I forget what Kadampa means. It means that you're curious and learning. It has to do with following the teachings of this practice. And it was actually, FPMT was founded in 1975, and here in the U.S., actually out in California, by Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa. So Lama Yeshe is the first picture next to His Holiness closest to me, and then Lama Zopa is on the other side of His Holiness. And then I know there's other pictures of the two of them as well. They both founded FPMT, and they're still considered the founders of our center. Lama Yeshe died in the early 80s. He had cancer, he manifested cancer, as they would say in Buddhism. And but Lama Zopa comes usually about once a year. So he'll be coming to our center in August before he leads a retreat in Black Mountain. And he picked our center to do these retreats for 5 years. They were interrupted because Lama Zopa Rinpoche manifested a stroke a few years ago. And he is doing just extremely well. And he's done 2 retreats since his stroke. And he's going to do another one this year. The retreats are 2 weeks. You can go for a weekend. You can go for a week. This year he's doing 4 weeks. And I don't know how many people will be able to go for the entire 4 weeks, but if you can get to any of them, it's amazing. And amazing is one of Lama Zopa's favorite words. He'll say, it's amazing, it's amazing. Wow, 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 wow. His spirit is contagious. And then our center follows His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and we have several of His Holiness's books out there and several on our list. In 1997, we had the good fortune of having a Geshe come to our center, Geshe-la, as we call him. La is a respect. So you'll hear that with all the nuns, like Khanda La, Chuki La, Geshe La. Except Geshe Songpo, we just say Geshe Songpo. and Geshe is it's actually like getting a PhD in Buddhism. It's the highest degree you can get. They study for like 25 to 30 years. Geshe La is a Larampa Geshe, which is the highest level Geshe you can have. And Geshe Songpo is also a very high Geshe. Geshe La came here not ever having left India, not speaking a word of English, not having a clue what he was coming for, didn't know anything about our culture. And those of you who've been coming on Sundays have met Geshe La and know what an incredibly special being he is, and how fortunate we all are that he's here. Jill mentioned that there are over 166 centers, 150 outside of the U.S. There's like 22 in the U.S., and not all those 22 FPM centers have Geshes, and we have one. So this is, just extremely unbelievable good karma. We also have 4 nuns that if you come on Sunday, you may have seen some of the nuns who come here. And this is what blows me away. When I think about being in Raleigh, North Carolina, having 2 Geshes here, Geshe La and Geshe Songpo, who came in the mid-2000s, and four nuns that came from our center and ordained. It's unbelievable. Something must have happened here at some point that brought us all here and all these sangha, because it's not like this anywhere else. I can tell you that. We first started in the basement. I mentioned that. Moved here in 2007. And then everything you see in here, the pictures, the any mantras you hear said on Sundays, any prayers that are said, are all to benefit our minds and to help us start to change our minds, become kinder, more generous, more compassionate people. And so it's all about working with our mind, which is pretty much what Buddhism is. It's an inward being. It's turning inward to actually look at ourselves and our own minds. And if you think about in Western philosophy, we know lots about the physical body, and we've studied, you know, in Western science and medicine, lots about the body, but we actually purposefully ignored the mind. We kind of separated that out and only looked at what is objective. Buddhism's been studying the mind for 2,500 years. They know everything there is to know about the mind. And now our Western science is really starting to kind of catch up with that and follow along. Some people will say the scientific proof of what Buddhist philosophy has said, and you know, Buddhists didn't need that proof. Buddhism didn't need that proof. They knew, like, you know, it was there, and they had realized that all along. It's technically not a religion, at least not in the Western sense of a religion. It's more of that philosophy of living our lives, psychology of the mind, you could say, and science. You know, Buddhism is based on science. His Holiness does the Mind Life conferences. I don't know how often they do those. I think once a year, but I got to go to one when he did one in Atlanta. They invited the public. It was on depression, how you can work with the mind for depression. So they were asked, my undergrad is in nursing. And so nurses, counselors, you know, anybody in the health professions, they were saying, you know, come on and just listen to what we have to say about depression. And it kind of blows you away to see His Holiness up there with scientists arguing these points about what is the mind and what is depression and how can you overcome depression through Buddhism. It really is quite fascinating. And I was going somewhere when I first started talking about that. It'll come back to me. Something about Buddhism and science. Oh, got it. And it wasn't there, but it's something I was reading or in an interview with him. Somebody said, well, what if science proves that there is no such thing as rebirth or reincarnation, which we'll talk about later? And His Holiness said, if scientists proves it, then we'll go back and we'll rethink it. But until that time, you know, here's why we believe it. And now there's been, with quantum physics, there's been, even in quantum theory, just recently there's been more and more studies about what is consciousness and where does consciousness go when our bodies die. So interesting stuff happening out there. So it is just that very scientific, philosophical approach to life. And so it's looking at our way of thinking, the study of our mind, how can we be calmer people, happier, more peaceful. And anything that you hear, especially from me, but regardless of who the teacher is, His Holiness will say, don't take it by my word. Read for yourself. What does your experience tell you about what you hear, what I say? What can you read and study? Study more, ask questions. I was raised Catholic. I learned early, you don't ever ask a question. about something. You know, you were just told, you know, it was God's will, or that's none of your business, or how dare you ask a question. And you'll never hear that here. You know, they want you to ask questions, and they'll say, you know, like if you were buying a diamond, you know, you would test it. You would make sure it was real, you know, real gold or a real diamond before you bought it or you did anything. And that's, you know, that's really what you want to do with what you hear or learn here. And there'll be some things here that you're going to say, yeah, I get being kinder and more compassionate, but this whole karma rebirth thing, no, not so much. That's okay. Just sit it on a shelf, come back to it periodically if you hear something that just makes you uncomfortable, and then see if you don't get more comfortable as time goes on. So it's almost like viewing it as a theory or a hypothesis, and then test it yourself and see what you think. So some of you said, I don't remember who it was, that they're here for answers, they're here to find what's the meaning or purpose. And that's what Buddha did 2,500 years ago. He was searching for the meaning of life. Why are we here? Why do we suffer? Why do we die? You know, what is the whole purpose? And that's what started him on this path. And as Tibetan Buddhists, that was, you know, this is who we follow, and we follow his teachings and the path that he laid out for us. In 84,000 teachings, all these little colorful flaps on the side of the altar, around the top and all down this side, those are the 84,000 teachings of Buddha that he taught during his life. And we'll talk about that again. But he really was searching, how can I be happy? What is the meaning of life? He was born in northern Italy, India, into a royal family. He was actually born to a king and queen, and so he was a prince, Prince Siddhartha. He had everything. He had a life of luxury. Anything he wanted was handed to him. He needed nothing. And his father, the king, really ensured that. A great sage had said early on when the Buddha was, when Siddhartha was first born, that he would either make a great king and take over his father's kingdom, or he would become this spiritual guide. He would become this sage. And his father said, no, he will take over my kingdom. And so he wanted to make sure he kept him there in this life of luxury where he could want nothing. He married at a very young age. He was like 16 or something when he got married. He has one son, Rahula, who actually does interpretations and taught. We have some of, I don't think we have any of his books, but he has quotes and things in books that we do study in here in the more intensive Dharma practice on Friday nights. So he became very active as well. But at age 29 is when Buddha just started questioning, what is outside these walls? He would hear things, he would see little things that just kind of began to make him wonder. And so he left. He had one of his great buddies who took care of him, Shana, who he conned into sneaking him out of the palace one night, and he left several times to go out and explore in the community. And he had never seen anybody get sick. He saw a person with a disease. He saw a corpse rotting. He saw an old person. He had never even seen an old person before. And he began to question, if this is happening, if I'm seeing this, then the people I love are going to die, are going to get sick, are going to suffer. And I need to find a way to stop it. I need to look at why is this happening and what can be done. So at the age of 35, he really Well, I guess it was before 35. He left the palace for good. He packed up, left his wife, his son, his father, his mother had died, and went out searching. And he hooked up with five other ascetics, I guess. They were five other men who were searching for the same answers. And they were searching through deprivation. Here was the Buddha with this life of luxury, had anything he could want, and had to give that all up. They gave up food, they gave up shelter, they gave up everything. And he did that for 6 years, just to try to, you know, they thought that through this massive self-deprivation that they would find the answer. And he didn't. The Buddha actually almost died. He was eating like one leaf or one nut a day. That was all he was having. And he went to take a bath in the river, and he almost drowned. He found in, and the story goes that a woman found him and fed him and nourished him. And when he was sitting on this riverbank regaining his health, a boat floated by. And on the boat was a person playing a guitar. And as the Buddha was listening and watching, he realized that if the strings were too tight, the music didn't sound good. And if the strings were too loose, you couldn't play music. They had to be strung just without too much tension, without, you know, not too relaxed, to play beautiful music. And that's what really started this middle way. You know, it's not a matter of having all this luxury, and you can't deny all that and deprive yourself. You know, we have to find the middle way in life. And so the answers didn't come easy. After he had that realization, he sat under the Bodhi tree for 49 days and just meditated for 49 days. And that's when he realized the answers to why we suffer and how we can stop the suffering. And suffering, I hear different words for suffering. And the one that I like the best is like just that sense of dissatisfaction where you know there's something more to life. So it's not just, you know, physical pain that's part of suffering, but it's just all the little dissatisfactions, the answers we don't have, the discomforts maybe that we have. You can use that word, you know, those types of words in place of suffering. So after he sat under the Bodhi tree and became the enlightened one, he was about 35 years old then. He went on to teach for at least 40 more years. And again, he taught to all different walks of life. So the teachings range so that no matter who hears one of the teachings, you get what you need from it. So he would realize what somebody might need for that teaching, and that's what he taught. And that's how he ended up with 84,000 teachings. But there's four turnings of the wheel, his four big teachings that he had that we'll talk about tonight. So, the word Buddha is the enlightened one or fully enlightened one. It's the person who reached that self-awareness. And the name Shakyamuni Buddha, and he is considered the historical Buddha. There's other Buddhas that came before him, at least three other Buddhas before him. But in our lifetime, in this teaching, he's the historical Buddha for us. Shakya is from the clan of where he was located, which is now present-day Nepal. Muni means sage. And then Buddha is that fully enlightened one. So it's just an honor name, Shakyamuni, and then Buddha. And enlightenment is the ultimate goal of our practice. Actually, regardless of the faith or the spiritual practice that you're on, you know, it's all kind of a direction that we're all heading. All limitations are removed. All obscurations in our mind, all the negativities are removed completely, and you just have this infinite wisdom and compassion once you're enlightened. Buddha was a human being, just like all of us. So there is no God in Buddhism. There is no creator God. All of us can become a Buddha with great effort and studying and the practice that we have. So it's not like there's somebody out here. When we pray, you don't really pray to a Buddha to help you. There's Buddhist teachings. We have teachers here that can help guide us and keep us on track and on the right path. But Buddha was a man who became enlightened. Questions, comments? Yep. Wait for the microphone. Sorry.
In a previous slide, it was saying how he meditated under the tree and stuff. Was he the originator of meditation, or was that a common practice throughout that part of the world at that time? Or
contemplative practices were quite common, so he was not the originator. And probably for years before then, the Hindu practices and other practices, meditation was there as well. So he was not the originator. Kind of look at it like that way, and he perfected it. He sat there and had the realizations that the rest of us are trying to gain through it. That answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Well, I was going to say, how do you know how long meditation has been around?
Oh. Do you know, Hedy? At least 2,500 years? I don't. So, I don't. That's a good question. I should know that. I think I've heard that, but I don't remember. You'll usually say, like I've heard Geshe-la when he does teachings, he'll say, we know meditation works and we've been practicing this for 2,500 years, but it really was here before that time. I'm not sure when, but I will try to find out.
Thank you.
Question. So whenever he was brought up in the castle or whatever, was he raised a Hindu? Or what was that he was brought up as?
I don't think he was brought up as anything. His father felt like you just needed to, it was more material and worldly. So he was not raised anything, not raised Hindu. I think there was probably some Hindu influence there, if I had to guess. But he did not have a spiritual practice before he left. Now, I'm 98% sure about that. Do you know? But I don't think he would have been a Hindu. But there are people at his time that were. Am I buzzing? I kept thinking it was my ears. Maybe it's too close to my mouth. No. Thank you. Okay. Oh, much better. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes.
I was just wondering what the Tibetan Mahayana practice, what the general view is on other Buddhist traditions outside of that one.
That's good. A good question. And we will talk about that in this class. His Holiness feels like every different tradition has something to add and are wonderful paths to follow. Doesn't have to be this one, but we will talk about what are some of those other traditions and paths and where did they come from. But they're all good. They're all quite different. Any of you been in a Zen center, a Japanese center? I mean, it's just stark you know, and it's really just that, the mind, and it's, you know, it's very different than this. Some traditions don't follow His Holiness. They follow, you know, other teachers' philosophies. But what I've heard is they're all good, and it's finding which one kind of resonates with you and feels the best.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'd encourage you, especially as you're searching, is try them, but then come back to us. I've tried several different forms of meditation. You know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s. Transcendental meditation with help work was quite common. And nothing can compare to this. There's just no comparison. That was my experience, but everybody's experience is quite different. So is that me? Oh. Maybe it's my deodorant. Ah, it's gone. Oh, maybe because it's down there? What if I put it up? You think that'll do it? So Buddha died in when he was, you know, in his late 70s, and he was in Kushinagar in eastern India. I almost said Italy again. Even with great yogis, great meditators, they know when they're dying, and they will either sit in a meditative pose or they'll lie in the lion's pose, which is the position that Buddha died in, where you kind of lay on your right side. There's a statue there. I don't know if any of you have ever seen it. I have not. With your head rested on your right hand. And like we have several monks, one of them, Venerable George, who is taught here, and he's on a 3-year retreat. He's finishing up his second year retreat now up in Asheville, but he'll sleep this way because it's supposed to be, you know, very conducive to lucid dreams and, you know, help with teachings that you've learned. And so you could try it after you leave here.
I was reading that, and I tried it, and I really had some really good dreams. But I also read that the woman is supposed to mirror the left side instead of the right side. Is that true?
Well, I hadn't heard that. I've never heard the difference for female or male. It's always okay. Been right side, but it doesn't mean I'm right. No pun intended. But I think it's for both. You know, and with genders, you a lot of times, like there's things in the teaching that'll say man or son, or it's just when they were written. There's I won't say there's equality because it's a hierarchy, but I think what goes for a man goes for a woman. They used to say that. To wish for a life to come back as a man because you're more likely to become enlightened. But, you know, His Holiness said, in my next life, I'm coming back as a blonde female, you know? I'm going to show you can get enlightened then, too. So, yeah, there's no difference. At least not that I've ever heard. So keep laying on your right side. Okay. I knew I was bringing too many papers in here and I'd get lost in them, and I totally am, so that's all right. We'll go anyhow. So, the Buddha gave 4 major teachings. The first one was called the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, and Dharma are these teachings. And his first one he gave was the 4 Noble Truths, and that was his huge realization when he was sitting under that tree, and what was going to be able to get us out of suffering. And there were 3 other
turnings. One was on what is the nature of reality, which is a huge topic that we'll talk about in the upcoming sessions, and to just look at how things truly exist was another one, kind of saying similar things. So the Four Noble Truths, there are four truths. You have the truth of suffering, the truth of the causes of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path to the cessation of suffering. So the first step is to realize suffering exists. It is a truth. And call it that dissatisfaction, whatever you want to call it. But it's just admitting that that dissatisfaction exists. And for much of that suffering, we feel it. We live it. We know it as well. So you admit you're sick, that you have this illness. It's a nice comparison to think about this in terms of then seeing a doctor to try to get help. So then you have the truth of the cause of suffering. It has a cause. You can go to the doctor and you can get a diagnosis. You know what causes your suffering. Just because you get a diagnosis doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get cured if you don't follow what the doctor says. Or they may not know a cure, but you know what the disease is, and this doctor is going to tell you there's an effective treatment for your illness, and he can determine that. And then the third one, the truth of the cessation of suffering, is it can end. The doctor is going to write you a prescription to end all your suffering in life, all your dissatisfaction. And then the truth of the path to the cessation of suffering. So there's a path to end it. There's a treatment. So once you have that prescription, you don't get it filled. You don't take it. You're not going to get better. So the path is, here's your diagnosis, here's your prescription, here's what you got to do to get better. Now we have to follow it. And remember, there's no creator God. Nobody can come down and help us do this, that we have to do it ourselves to practice. So this whole fourth noble, these four noble truths is reflected in what we call the graduated path to enlightenment. It's the LAMRIM, L-A-M-R-I-M, LAMRIM. And we'll talk about the LAMRIM again later on in this practice, or in this the next four sessions. So when you think about suffering, nobody wants to talk about suffering. I remember the first time I met Venerable Amy, she said they were having this huge Buddhist teaching on suffering, and they were all excited about, you know, we have a way to help you get out of suffering, and they were doing all this marketing, and next door to them was like some Las Vegas show place, you know, happiness thing, and she had like 10 people come to her session, and there were like hundreds there, and she kept saying, no, but we're the way to find happiness, but it's hard to convince anybody when you're talking about suffering. And we will discuss these paths, or these four noble truths in the path more next week, and what each of those means, and how you can use those to get on that path and to, you know, find that end to the suffering that we have. And again, some of that suffering is our own suffering that you know. You've been sick, you've seen people sick, you've seen people die. Nobody's gotten out of this alive that anybody knows of. We know that's going to happen. But we know that the way to deal with that is through our minds, that we can find that sense of peace and happiness no matter what, and end it for good, to cut it at the root, to end all suffering, which is the goal that we're all trying to do. So, any questions before we kind of do our next meditation and wrap up a few things?
My question is, when you say Venerable Amy, what does that first word say?
Venerable okay. Amy, thank you.
What does that mean?
So, like, Geshe is that term of respect for somebody who's obtained their Geshe degree, and La is that term of respect as well. So you say Geshe La, Kanda La. Venerable Amy kept her name. People will call her Amy La. So you could say Amy La, or they'll put the word venerable in front of it. It's really no different than La. It's a term of respect. So it's Venerable Amy. So it's real hard for me to say Amy without saying Venerable Amy. Like Venerable George, he kept his Western name. Nobody says Georgia La. But you say Venerable George, although he'll say it's George. I'm that old monk up in the mountains, you know. His Holiness, you don't say, well, I've heard people say Venerable, but most people just say His Holiness. Like, it's hard for me to say the Dalai Lama without His Holiness, because that's the term of respect. That answer your question? I think there's other terms of respect. Like Lama means teacher. So like Lama Yeshe, he was a teacher. Rinpoche is a reincarnate of some holy being that came before. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche. So you don't say venerable Lamas. Well, maybe, but usually you just say Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and Rinpoche adds that level of respect. Lama Yeshe's reincarnate is a young man. He's in his 30s, who's pretty awesome. He was a monk. I don't know if he still is. He doesn't wear robes, and he has gone to college, and he does film and production. But Lama Yeshe founded the Universal Wisdom Education before he passed away. That's the 16 guidelines that I had mentioned. And then Lama Zopa really, really enacted those. And we have those here in our children's program. Schools are using the 16 guidelines. They've really become quite popular. But Ozel, who's Lama Yeshe's reincarnate, is very involved in the 16 guideline practice and Universal Wisdom Education. But you don't say Lama in front of his name for whatever reason. Yes.
So the suffering as dissatisfaction thing, does Buddhism make a distinction between suffering as dissatisfaction and suffering because your kids are starving?
Oh, yes, definitely. So we'll talk about this next week. There's three kinds of suffering. You have the suffering of suffering, which is your kids are suffering. You have a disease. You're getting old. I mean, we see suffering all the time that we have for lots of reasons. When I think about people in war-torn countries and what's happening in Syria, unbelievable suffering of suffering. And then you have the suffering of change. No matter how good you got it, not gonna last. And so things change all the time. Like, I walked in here and I was like, oh, geez, it's so hot. And now I'm thinking, well, it's kind of cold, you know. Then I'll wrap up, and then you take that off and you think, you know, so you have this suffering of change. Then you have this all-pervasive suffering. And the all-pervasive suffering is, whether we know it or not, we're in this cyclic existence. We come back over and over again. It's like Groundhog Day. We do the same thing over and over again, and that's really what we're trying to get out of, is that all-pervasive suffering, which ends the other two as well. And we'll go into a little bit more detail. I think next week we'll talk about that. Man, y'all are going to keep me on my toes. That's good. And if you look up anything I said and it's wrong, bring that back next week so we can get everybody straight. After I teach one of these, I say, Geshe-la, I told them this. And they'll say, that's okay. But next week, make sure you tell them this. So I may have a whole list of notes. Okay, so let's try. Yes.
So the Dalai Lama, is he a fully enlightened being, or how do you get that? How did he get that? It's like, was he a monk, and then he became the Dalai Lama?
So the Dalai Lama, he'll say that he's a simple monk, but he was born the Dalai Lama. So he's the reincarnate. He's the 14th Dalai Lama. So there were 13 predecessors before him. A great movie to see. I don't know if we have it out here, but I bet you can get it on Netflix. It's called Kundzin. Oh, man, don't ask me to spell that. K-U-N-D-Z-I-N. Kundzin. Is that it?
I thought it was just Kundin.
Kundin. K-U-N-D-I-N. Kundin. K-U-N-D-I-N. And it tells you about how this 14th Dalai Lama was found, because you are found, just like Ozil was found after Lama Yeshe died. I mean, when you're a holy being, the rest of us, nobody's going to find us. they were looking for the next Dalai Lama. And so he was found in Tibet when he was like 3 or 4 years old. It's fascinating. And in the movie, His Holiness consulted on it, but His Holiness's sister plays his mother in the movie, so it's pretty accurate. But it's interesting the way they find him, and they use dough balls. And when I first started practice, I was like, dough balls, seriously? That's how you find the Dalai Lama? And now I'm like, oh yeah, of course you throw dough balls and and you find the Dalai Lama, so go figure what you end up believing. Because your whole thinking pattern changes. So he is a reincarnate. Most everybody believes, and he is the spiritual head of Tibetan Mahayana tradition Buddhism. He was a political head in Tibet before the Chinese in 1959, and he had to escape. And we'll talk about that a little bit next week, too. But many people believe he is the Buddha, that he is a fully enlightened one. Whether he is or not, it's what you believe in your mind that makes somebody a Buddha. It's how you see and how you revere them. But I've heard enough things and you see enough things that it makes me become a believer that he is an enlightened one. He is a Buddha. Anything else? Hedy, you have anything to add? Or Brian?
It's Kundin. It's D-U-N.
D-U-N. Kundin. Now that's much better. Thank you. You Googled it? What did we do before Google? Thank you. Kundin. It's really, really quite fascinating. And if you're interested in how they find a Dalai Lama, and the Chinese have already said they're picking the next Dalai Lama. So when His Holiness passes away, I have heard him actually say, I'm not coming back. But then I heard him say, I'm coming back, let them pick who they want, and I'm going to live my life and help people become enlightened. So we'll see what happens. See whether he comes back as a blonde female. He'll be the first Dalai Lama who's a female. Okay, so let's talk about the 7-point mind training in 2 minutes or less, and then we'll talk about not 7-point mind training. I'm sorry, 7-point body posture. I was studying the 7-point mind training and had that on my brain. So in this tradition, there's 7 points you think about. So your legs, if any of you can do a full lotus, it's considered to be the most stable. We do have a handful of people here at the center who can do that. Or half lotus, one leg on top of the other, or Indian style, you know, whatever is comfortable for you. Or you can sit in a chair. They say that if you sit in a chair, the goal is that your back is straight. So if you're sitting to meditate, you don't sit back. Even if the chair has a back, you sit forward. And you think about your spine being completely straight, as if there's a string coming from the top of your head, pulling upward from the crown, and like a stack of coins, everything nice and straight. So sitting on the cushion, if your hips are up higher than your knees, that can be a more comfortable and more stable position. So your arm should be loose in your lap. In this tradition, your right palm is on top of your left with your thumbs touching, and it's just loose with your shoulders nice and relaxed. Your elbows out slightly away from your body because it allows air to circulate. I don't think in 2 minutes we have to worry about that, but you know, when you meditate for a long time, that's important. And your back being straight really embraces that clarity, that alertness. Doesn't mean we're not going to droop over and fall asleep, but maybe we won't. Your eyes, they tell you not to keep them open, too many distractions, not to close them. You could become too drowsy. I actually think when you first start meditating, closing your eyes can be helpful, but they say just to let a little bit of light in. So you just, they're slightly closed or slightly opened, however you want to say that, with just a little light getting in. And you direct your gaze downward. So your jaw should be relaxed with your teeth slightly apart. Your tongue should rest on the top of your palate, just lightly touching the back of your teeth. And that prevents the flow of saliva so we don't start drooling when you meditate for a long time. So this whole posture is to allow us to concentrate, allow us to have full concentration. And interesting, at last year's Light of the Path, Lama Zopa Rinpoche spent, I can't even tell you how long, but at least an hour, probably several hours, talking about this posture. It was amazing. It's amazing. You know, learned so much just by listening to that. So the posture is huge. Your head should be tilted slightly forward just to allow your gaze to just naturally direct to the floor with your chin slightly down. So go ahead and just take a couple of deep breaths. And I know your mind is probably swimming right now, and that's okay. This was the first session just to start us so we get that little taste, that little flavor. And we won't have all the answers. That's really not what this is about. But it's to help us focus inward. There's several meditations that we'll try in here. And just focus on your breath, trying to let go of all thoughts. Think about what your intentions were for coming here. And then just begin to practice dedication by thinking, whatever information I gained, I want it to grow and grow. I'm sitting here, nothing made any sense. It doesn't matter. You're sitting here in this room with this incredible group of people, sharing and listening and learning. I can't think of a better way to spend an evening. And even if you walk out of here and think, what was that all about? Believe it or not, you gained something. And so dedicate whatever that positive nugget is that it will grow and increase and that it will never disappear. For your own well-being and the well-being of all others. And so as you start meditating, be gentle with yourself. I mean, there's sometimes I've sat on a cushion and I don't even know where my mind was. You follow all kinds of stories, and more stories come up the more you try to quiet your mind. So start slow, but try. That can be your only homework is, you know, just print out one of the handouts on the breathing meditation and just practice for 1 minute, 1 minute a day or less. I had to start out with 30 seconds because that's all I could sit still for. 30 seconds is good. So just start and practice and then let everything else go. We will talk about briefly, we'll just go through the history of Buddhism and how it spread, the Buddhist view of what the mind is. We'll talk more about meditation and we'll actually practice some more, go into more depth about the Four Noble Truths, just talk a little bit about what it means to be a Buddhist. And then just remember the Kadampa Center link. There's Discovering Buddhism modules out there. There's other things that you can download, but just stick with the Discovering Buddhism links for now unless you really want to delve a little deeper. The Buddhism in a Nutshell book is it's a great book. We have other great books out there. Whether you buy the book or not, it doesn't matter for taking this class. You know, just totally up to you whether you want that or not. You can also join our email list if you're interested. You just get announcements and things going on. We are going to have some visiting teachers coming up soon, too. Don't remember their names or when they're coming, but but I know I heard that. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening. Be careful, and I hope to see you next week, especially you students from Inlo. I almost said Inlo. That would have been bad. Athens.